From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, January 25th, 2019. And on this day, Maine's congressional delegation on the end of the federal government shutdown. And we'll remember Ralph Lancaster, one of the nation's top trial attorneys. That's ahead in a moment. Independent U.S. Senator Angus King says the anticipated end to the longest shutdown of the federal government in U.S. history could pave the way for a bipartisan deal on border security. Reacting to President Trump's announcement that he and congressional leaders had reached a deal to temporarily reopen the government, King says the president made a grave mistake using the shutdown as leverage to get his wall along the southern border. And King says he hopes the president won't try it again if negotiations don't go his way over the next 3 weeks.
I hope that he's noticed what happened during this period, that a lot of people were hurt, a lot of damage has been done to the economy, and he hasn't gained much ground politically.
King also hopes the president doesn't attempt to achieve comprehensive immigration reform in the short period he and Congress have to negotiate on border security. Republican Senator Susan Collins says the deal should prod congressional leaders and President Trump to negotiate in good faith over border security.
That we will work to hammer out a compromise on border security so that we are not facing the same situation again on February 15.
Collins' remarks from the Senate floor came shortly after the government funding deal was announced. She was one of six Republicans who voted with Democrats yesterday to approve bills to temporarily reopen the government without the president's border wall. She also supported a Republican bill that would have provided some funding for the border wall. Democrats argued that bill would reward Trump for using the government as leverage for a campaign promise he can't fulfill. Maine Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree is also welcoming the deal, but she also says the shutdown came at a heavy cost to federal workers, some of whom were forced to work without pay or take out loans to pay their bills. Pingree also says she hopes the funding compromise, which is essentially the same proposal that failed to win approval in the Senate on Thursday, will allow congressional leaders and the president to focus on border security.
Hopefully get the president off of all this mean-spirited talk about, you know, about who's on the other side of that border and just the sort of garbage that comes out of his mouth sometimes that isn't appropriate to this negotiation.
Pingree says Trump's shutdown tactic was unnecessary. And finally, Maine Democratic Congressman Jared Golden says he's glad President Trump and congressional leaders have reached a deal, but he's also frustrated that it took 35 days and caused financial hardship for 80,000 federal workers. Golden says the deal is essentially bringing the president and congressional leaders to the same place they were before the shutdown began.
Government needs to work better than this. We can't be having 30-day shutdowns on a rolling basis here.
Golden says there is bipartisan agreement on many border security issues, and the shutdown was unnecessary and costly to thousands of federal workers. This past Tuesday, more than 20 volunteer pilots around the country took to the skies to record the effects of a natural phenomenon that happens twice a year, a king tide. The pilots are part of an unusual Colorado-based organization known as Lighthawk. It's been working since the 70s to conserve wildlife and large landscapes and to document the effects of climate change from the air. Susan Sharon has more.
At the height of the king tide, on a blustery, clear, and freezing cold morning, a plane took off from the Portland Jetport and traveled along southern Maine's shoreline. Other flights departed from New Hampshire, New Jersey, and Florida, and from several states on the West Coast.
Takeoff on course 010. We'll let you know we're turning to the southeast.
It's often said that a picture is worth a thousand words, and from 1,000 feet above the ground, the perspective widens. That can be especially helpful for researchers and policymakers. And when it comes to planning for something like sea level rise, a king tide is a good snapshot into the future. It's the time on the calendar when the moon and the sun align in a certain way to create the highest tides of the year.
We're doing these flights today to look at king tides and how they're starting to inundate further in the inland areas.
Jonathan Milne is the Eastern Program Director for Lighthawk, whose nearly 200 volunteer pilots have assisted in projects as diverse as tracking the Florida algae blooms this past summer to to showing the effects of drought along the Colorado River, to coordinating the transport of endangered California condors between Idaho and the Golden State. On this day, though, pilots have been deployed along the two coasts with a similar mission in mind.
We're flying a variety of locations, especially low-lying locations, to show people once that tide's all the way up, we start to see how far that sheet is starting to go. So then we can see roads and stuff and see how close the water's actually coming to those roads.
Now, there's the wastewater treatment plant. That's the Algonquin Sewer Treatment Plant right there to your right, one of the most at-risk pieces of infrastructure in the state of Maine.
Peter Slavinsky is a marine geologist with the Maine Geological Survey and the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. But for the purpose of this flight, he's a volunteer tour guide for the Surfrider Foundation, an international nonprofit that focuses on coastal issues such as pollution, beach access, offshore drilling, and sea level rise. Slavinsky is especially interested in showing Representative Lydia Bloom, a Maine lawmaker who serves on the Marine Resources Committee, areas of the coast at risk for flooding. Nuisance flooding in Portland, for example, used to be about 5 times a year.
Over the last 20 years or so, that's up to about 10 times per year on average. And then if you take into account even just minimal amounts of sea level rise, like 1 foot, there's about a tenfold increase in what we call nuisance flooding. So what is flooded once would be flooded 10 times.
This week, data scientists from First Street Foundation and Columbia University released peer-reviewed research that found increased tidal flooding caused by sea level rise has eroded home values in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and Maine by more than $400 million between 2005 and 2017. That flooding is only expected to increase over the next 15 years. And for Representative Bloom, the Light Hawk flight gave her a little window on that world. She says she could see how vulnerable some structures are along the shore, and she says she'd like to see other cities and towns follow the lead of the town of York.
Sea level rise has been something that my town of York has done some work on, has put it in their comprehensive planning, and I feel like it's a very important thing that all of Maine needs to address, and we need to take more of a lead on it from a state perspective.
Bloom has a bill being introduced for a third time to help Maine's 145 coastal communities plan for that scenario, along with state guidance for best practices. A separate bill, modeled on one in New Hampshire, would create a Coastal Hazards and Risks Commission.
To really look at and to assess what are our vulnerabilities, what can we do for adaptation, what has worked, what's not working.
Bloom says she expects the bill, which was blocked by former Governor Paul LePage, to pass this year. She's also supporting a $50 million bond to help cities and towns pay for some of the costs of mitigation. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And finally tonight, a Maine man considered to be one of the nation's top trial attorneys has died. In a career that spanned nearly 60 years, Ralph Lancaster practiced civil and criminal law and worked on cases that went before the U.S. Supreme Court and The Hague. As Patty White reports, friends and colleagues say the passing of Lancaster signals the end of an era.
In the decades that Lancaster practiced law, Maine Chief Justice Lee Sofley says he was a role model for countless attorneys.
Ralph Lancaster was a lion of the Maine bar.
Not just for his sharp mind, Sofley says, but for his civility, even in court.
He would win the legal point and never make anybody else seem demeaned in the process. That is becoming a lost art.
Lancaster was born in Bangor in 1930 and was raised by his great aunt and uncle after his mother died during childbirth when he was 3. Lancaster ultimately graduated from Harvard Law School and worked for the Portland law firm now known as Pierce Atwood. While there, he became a mentor to Bill Kayada, who's now a federal judge on the First District Court of Appeals.
You know, he rose from humble beginnings in Bangor, Maine, to end up dining with the Prime Minister at 10 Downing Street and in the White House and working for the Supreme Court, and yet treated everyone the same.
The U.S. Supreme Court tapped Lancaster 4 times to make recommendations on cases as a special master. Lancaster represented the U.S. in a Georges Bank water boundary dispute case in front of the International Court of Justice in The Hague. He served as independent counsel to investigate charges against a cabinet member under President Bill Clinton. Lancaster also became president of the American College of Trial Lawyers.
What separated him from so many of the rest of us was that he was terrifically smart, had an unsurpassed and almost intimidating work ethic.
David Barry, managing partner of Pierce Atwood, says one of the keys to Lancaster's success was his drive to outwork his adversaries. Both Barry and Bill Chiata say that as a person, Lancaster was noted for his kindness and humility.
For someone who achieved such respect and such success in so many venues and so many positions of great responsibility and leadership, he was remarkably self-effacing and seemed to not look for what some other people may have seen as the enjoyments of the spotlight.
Lancaster even shunned the spotlight in death. He wrote his own obituary and only mentions his law career once, explaining that he omitted his professional accomplishments to, quote, emphasize that material matters pale into insignificance when compared to the love of family and friends. Lancaster died Tuesday in Falmouth at the age of 88. He leaves behind his wife, six children, and several grand and great-grandchildren. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, January 25th, 2019. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.